Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 10th of Nisan. We start by thanking OU.org, the OU, and Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser for their help in putting these up and having them available to you. This is from Shut Tzitzeliez, their 14th volume, Chelik Yudalit Siman Yud, the 10th responsum, from the 10th of Nisan of Tufshin Lamed Chet of 1978. The question at hand was whether one is required to or exempt from standing for a Torah scholar in the middle of saying Kriyat Shema, meaning there's a requirement to stand for a Torah scholar who passes by you. Different Torah scholars at different levels or different relationships with you, it would be in different proximity, but let's say for the simplest example, a Torah scholar passes within my Dalet Amot, within about 6 feet of me, at a time when I am saying Kriyat Shema. Now, ordinarily, if I'm not saying Kriyat Shema, we're supposed to stand for such people. It's part of our honor for Torah. It's also generally true that we have to stand for the elderly in that same situation if they pass by, so that doesn't come up in this tshuva, so I won't mention it again. Question is, if somebody's saying Kriyat Shema, they're reciting Shema, we have another principle in the Torah in Halacha called Osek B'mitzvah, Poter Min Mitzvah. When I'm involved in one commandment, I'm exempt from another commandment. So maybe my involvement in the recitation of Shema exempts me from the need to stand for this Torah scholar. So, since the answer starting on the answer says, the first instinct is to say that, in fact, Kriyat Shema is a Torah requirement, is a biblical obligation. He quotes the Rambam in the second chapter of Kriyat Shema, Shulchan Aruch as well. There is a debate about this among Rishonim, among authorities. There's a whole range of opinions. There's those who say only the first line is required on a biblical level, in which case it's impossible to be in the middle of Kriyat Shema when somebody passes by within that first line. But it's fundamentally not going to be what's going to be happening. But we tend to assume that the paragraphs of Shema, all three paragraphs of Shema are a biblical obligation, and therefore it would seem like the answer should be, yeah, you don't stand because you're involved in a mitzvah. When you're involved in a mitzvah, you do not need to interrupt it in order to fulfill another mitzvah. But there is a contradictory source that seems to say that that's not the full analysis. The Gemara Kiddushin Lamed Gimel Amud Bet has the words of Abaye, who is Layit Allah. Now, Layit Allah sort of colloquially means cursed out, but it doesn't quite mean he cursed him out. It means that he strongly criticized a Torah scholar, not a specific Torah scholar, any Torah scholar, who doesn't stand before his teacher and master, before his Rebbe, his teacher and master, at the time when he's learning Torah. Meaning, let's say you're sitting in the Beit Midrash. This shit used to happen all the time, let's say, in the Beit Midrash that I was sometimes in the Yeshivat HaRetzion Beit Midrash. You'd be sitting there. It can happen, let's say, the YU Beit Midrash. You're sitting in the Beit Midrash, and your Rebbe, your Magid Shir, walks by. He had left out for a minute, or he was just coming in. He walks by you. Do you get up or not? So theoretically, again, you'd say to yourself, well, I'm involved in a mitzvah. When I'm involved in a mitzvah, I'm exempt from another mitzvah. Except that Abaye is now pointing out to us that's not the way we understand it in that situation. We believe that one is required to stand up for the Rebbe when he walks by, and that is possible as well. That is ruled lahalacha in the Torah, in the Shulchan Aruch, in Resh Mem Dalet in Yerudea, in paragraph Yud Aleph, that even at a time when somebody is involved in Torah study, they have to stand for their Rebbe, their teacher, and master. So that seems to say that whatever is going on when it comes to standing up for a Torah scholar, the fact of being an Osek B'Mitzvah, the fact of being involved in a mitzvah is not enough to exempt a person. So maybe that's true for Kriyat Shema as well. Maybe the fact that one is involved in Kriyat Shema is not enough to say you don't need to stand up for a Torah scholar who passes by. So that depends on the reason. Why is it that when one is involved in Torah study, they are required to learn to stand up for their Rebbe? The Shulchan Aruch, since the other points out, Shulchan Aruch doesn't give you a reason. And that's an important point to make, that very often halakha, we have halakhot that come down to us without specific reasons. We have to then come to understand the reason, and depending on the reason we come up with, we'll come to different conclusions about things that happen further on, and that's really a function of the depth and the accuracy of our understanding of what's going on in halakha. So it becomes true that reasons, by which we don't mean philosophical reasons, not like some broad philosophical idea, it's not some hashkafic idea. It's what did the halakha put into place, what were the parameters of it? That's what we mean by reason, and for what purpose, and how did it function? So, as it points out, that the Aruch HaShulchan on that discussion explains that the reason why a Torah scholar has to stand for his Rebbe is that even though it's true, it's a minor interruption, we often stop. There are many occasions where we stop Talmud Torah for other mitzvot. So what does that mean? What are the other occasions that we stop Talmud Torah, Torah study for other mitzvot? That's a mitzvah over it, right? It's not true. It theoretically could have been true, but it's not true that if somebody really learns Torah all day, they are free and exempt from all other mitzvot that come along. There are lots of discussions about that, and that's not our topic here, but it is true that there are many occasions when the fact that somebody is involved in Talmud Torah, in Torah study, if another mitzvah comes along that's a mitzvah overt, a mitzvah that is going to be lost unless one does it, then the general assumption is that yes, you do interrupt your Torah study for doing so. If that's true, then when the Rebbe walks by, that's a mitzvah overt, it's a mitzvah, not just overt in the sense of it will go away, but in the sense that it's right passing by you right now, but it's a mitzvah that you won't have this opportunity to do it again. It's a mitzvah that's passing by you. And therefore, we interrupt Talmud Torah for that purpose. If that's true, the Tzitzit says, he doesn't go on to say why it's true. It is true, but he doesn't say why should it be true that when mitzvot that are gonna, we won't have an opportunity for them come to us, that we have to do them. He doesn't explain, only the Aruch HaShulchan explains, but it means that when it comes to Kriyat Shema, we don't have that reason, meaning it's sort of embedded in the practice of Torah study. And it seems to me that a plausible explanation, and I'm interpolating my own idea here, if it's wrong, I apologize, but it seems to me that part of the answer is that since Talmud Torah is such a pervasive, it's meant to be such a pervasive element of Jewish life, that it's meant to be that a Jew is generally studying Torah. And I could, you know, demonstrate that from other sources, but I'm not going to right now. But if it's meant to be true that a Jew generally studies Torah, then it becomes a problem if you're going to say that whenever a Jew is studying Torah, they're exempt from other mitzvot. Even other mitzvot, they won't have the opportunity to do when they, should they eventually stop studying Torah. So then it's going to get in the way of the whole system, right? The Torah gave us halachot, gave us rules, gave us ideas that we're supposed to be fulfilling. And some of those we can say, well, I can get to it later. Some of those we can't get to later. So those we can't get to later, to allow Talmud Torah, Torah study, to get in the way of them, that seems to cut at and to threaten the system as a whole. That's what it seems to me. Whether that's correct, it is true that, and this is the part that they're just saying confidently, it is true that idea that we often stop Talmud Torah, we often stop Torah study for mitzvot overot, for mitzvot that whose time is passing, is fleeting, and therefore we can't say, oh, I'll get to it later. So since that's true, then it becomes part of the nature of Torah study that it is an activity, a Torah activity, where despite the general principle that ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah, that somebody who was involved in a mitzvah is exempt from a mitzvah, despite that general principle, in the case of Talmud Torah, that principle is at the very least mitigated. It's not fully applied. Once we know that's true, then the Rebbe passing by is also a mitzvah that's not going to be here again in this context, in this instance, ever again. And therefore, we tell the guy to stand up, which is fine. But then it means that its applicability to Kriyat Shema is much less so. Because in Kriyat Shema, we don't have such a principle. So I might say to myself, no, when a person is saying Kriyat Shema, they don't have the obligation to stand up for somebody who, a Torah scholar who passes by, because ha'osek b'mitzvah, patur b'mitzvah, being involved in one mitzvah exempts us from another mitzvah. That would be one way to look at it. That's the way the Aruch HaShulchan is to look at it. And that would lead to the conclusion that, in fact, when somebody is saying Kriyat Shema, they need not stand up for a Torah scholar who passes by. However, the Lavush offered another reason. It's interesting that I don't think the Aruch HaShulchan necessarily addressed it so much, but different discussion. The Lavush says he doesn't say it. The Ritzel says Shemav Liyah Bil Shono. It sounds like he means it. This is what he implies, that the reason why you have to stand before an elderly person or a Torah scholar, even when you're studying Torah, is, he says, She'eino mevatel bazeh Torato, because it doesn't really stop you from learning. So that sounds like the reason why the obligated person to stand up in these situations was because it doesn't generally get so much in the way of learning Torah. The act of standing in the presence of learning Torah, let's say I'm learning Torah, I'm reading a Mishnah, I'm talking about a Gemara, I'm arguing with my friend, I'm yelling at him, whatever it is I'm doing, the act of standing doesn't really get in the way of that. It's an insignificant moment. And therefore, now that already sets up a very interesting principle that would say, ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min mitzvah, that if somebody's involved in one mitzvah, they're exempt from, they don't need to do other mitzvot. That seems to imply that's only true if it gets in the way of it. But if it doesn't get in the way of it, the Levush seems to imply, at least the case of Sabbath Torah, but it seems to imply in general, if the doing the other mitzvah doesn't get in the way of it. So, you know, and I'm not sure that that works halachically in the examples you have in the Gemara of other situations of Osik mitzvah, Patur min mitzvah. Now, it could be especially about Talmud Torah, things like that. For whatever it is, we're not going to get into that. We're just going to accept the Levush for how he says it. But if the Levush says it that way and he means it that way, it tells us two interesting principles. Principle number one, it tells us is, or idea number one, it would tell us is, it would imply that let's suppose that standing up would in fact get in the way of my Talmud Torah. So how could standing up get in the way for a moment? You stand up just to, you know, show respect for a passing Torah scholar, for a Rebbe, for an elderly person. Says, what if you're involved in a deep issue? And he quotes a pasuk, Asher ha'taif bo ve'einenu. It's a pasuk in Mishle, which is talking about, it's talking about something else, about fleeting pleasures and warning against them. But it said, what it means is, you look at your eyes at it one time and then you look again and it's gone. So the point is, there are things which, if you lose them, you lose them. And this is what Ezra's pointing out, which is kind of interesting because, I don't know, I guess I would think with great Torah scholars it wouldn't be true. There's sort of a sense by the time you get to a responsive, maybe just for me, maybe not for you, but there's sort of a sense by the time I read it, it's so well put together, it's so flowing. It's not always that I think that it's not always completely compelling. It's not that it completely, you know, proves the point to me in a way that it's inescapable, but it's so flowing, it feels like, and especially people like the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Ovadia Yosef, these are people whose bekiut, whose broad knowledge and whose broad acquaintance with Torah literature is so surprising and so out of the realm of anything that I could ever hope to do, that it feels to me like, you know, they came up with a question and the answer just came right out of them. Especially since it's also, they're so prolific, they produce so much, I can't even imagine they had time to think about anything, let alone to think deeply about it. However that worked, he is clearly aware of the idea that there are times when you're involved in thinking about something, it's a complex issue, or it's an issue, it's a thought that's not simple to get your head around, and it can happen that if you get distracted at all, you'll lose it, and you'll never have it again. So he says, according to Levush, then presumably you wouldn't have to stand up. Then that would mean that the person passing by would have to understand to themselves that for all that everybody else stands up for them, even though they're learning Torah, they'd have to say, oh, he must not have stood up because he's so involved in something. So you could say he's so involved he didn't see me. That would also help. If they really didn't see them, that would help. But even if they saw them, they could be so involved that they really can't even stand up for the person. I don't know. It's an odd idea to me because I actually have an image in my head of there's somebody in the Gush Beis Medrash who, when he gets involved in thinking, I'm not going to say his name because I don't know that he would already know this way, but he gets involved in thinking, he looks like he's really, really deeply involved in thought. And yet even him, I feel like I've seen him get up and walk around and holding on to that thought. So I'm not sure. But Sidney Ezra is comfortable with the idea that there might be thoughts that are so delicate, so tenuous, so not yet well formed, that if you interrupt them at all, then they would go away and you'd lose them, and therefore didn't want to, and that danger would be enough to exempt the person from having to stand while in the course of Talmud Torah, because the principle that you stand with people in the middle of learning Torah, even in the middle of learning Torah, stems from the assumption that that's not generally going to get in the way of your Talmud Torah. And this points out, it's not only the Levush, the Sefer HaMakne on Kiddushin, who all didn't seem to have seen the Levush, he seems to have seen it on his own. He said also, when Abaye curses, when Abaye denigrates a Torah scholar who's in the middle of learning and doesn't stand up for his teacher, for his Rebbe, that was only in a situation where there's not a question of Bittul Torah. But if the Kima, if the standing up would lead to any kind of a Bittul Torah, of a nullification of Torah, a lack of Torah study, so then the Makne agreed, and Makne said on his own, he thinks that Abaye would say you don't have to stand up. So that's in terms of the Talmud Torah applications of that idea. But then if you get back to our idea, that question of Kriyat Shema, there's an application here as well. Because if the whole point of standing up or not standing up is whether it will get in the way of the current performance, then it would seem to be true that if somebody, as I think is true for most people, could continue saying Kriyat Shema with around the same level of kavanah, of intent and focus, as they've been saying until now, then they would be required to. So, meaning that now we're saying the principle of Osek Mitzvah, Patur Mitzvah, when you're involved in one mitzvah, you're not required to do other mitzvah, is a principle that is limited by the question of, will the other mitzvah get in the way of performing this mitzvah? And if that's the idea, then in the case of Kriyat Shema, you have to think the same way. Would my standing for this person passing by me, to whom I owe the honor of standing for them in recognition of their walking by me, Would that interrupt my kavanah, my intent, my focus? And if it would not, I have to stand up. But if it would, then that's when I don't. That's when we can apply the principle of Osek B'tzor Patur Min Mitzvah. But then he says, Kazarti V'Itchashavti. I rethought it. Just to make clear to us that this isn't just like a thing that flows off his pen. He thinks about it and he worked it out. And as he was rethinking it, he said, no, I think maybe even according to Lavush and the Machne, I could say that was only when they said it's a question of whether you're going to have a Bittul Torah. It's a question that's going to get interrupt your Torah study and it's going to get in the way of it. And if not, then you'd have to stand for it. They didn't mean it as a broad definition issue within the principle level Osek B'tzor Patur Min Mitzvah. They meant it about Torah, only about Torah, its study itself. Since Torah study itself has, as we said for the Aruch HaShulchan, this usual idea that it gets interrupted for mitzvah overed, and so here only they were mekel, meaning they were lenient. Notice that word lenient is an interesting word, right? Is it when I say to you, if you're learning Torah, you do or don't have to get up for somebody who passes by, which one of those is stringent, which one is lenient? Is it stringent to say to get up, or is it lenient to say you can interrupt your Torah study when in general you're not allowed to interrupt your Torah study? However, I would have read it that I would have used the terminology, or maybe I might have avoided the terminology. He says, Rak b'kan hekelu, Kishiyesh bitul, that when it's going to create a bitul of your Torah, when it's going to interrupt your Torah study, then they were lenient to say you didn't have to stand up. So you have the lenient position to say you can continue studying Torah. The stringent position is to say, no, you have to fulfill the obligation to show honor for this passing person. In any case, here, what they were saying was, they allowed you to stay sitting if it leads to a bitul Torah. That was for a very particular reason. That particular reason was that if you didn't say that, then it would mean that the honor you owe Torah is outweighing Torah itself, the study of Torah itself. Why is that? Well, if I'm sitting learning Torah, and my standing will lead to a bitul Torah, will lead to some loss of Torah, we've said until now, let's say the loss of an idea that I would have had, or it will lead me to be interrupted. You know, I've seen it be said that people with ADD, for example, when they get distracted from something, it takes them a long time to reinsert themselves in the topic. And I myself have at least a little bit of that, right? When I am doing something and then I turn away from it to come back and get refocused and re-centered and re-involved, it's not a huge break, but there's a break there. There's a time, there's an adjustment there. So all that might be considered bitul Torah. So if I'm in the middle of learning and it's going well, and somebody passes by me and I stand up for them, and now I have to spend another couple of whatever it is, seconds, minutes, re-acclimating myself to the study to the study issue, so then the Tzitzelezer is suggesting maybe what the Levush and the Machna mean is that would then sort of prefer or emphasize the honor of Torah, the honor of Torah, right, by honoring Torah scholars, by standing up for them, over the study of Torah itself. But when it comes to other mitzvot, there's not that self-contradiction. Because if I interrupt Kriyat Shema, right, other mitzvot, let's say, if I stop Torah study for other mitzvot, I'm not honoring something about Torah over the Torah itself, because it's a commandment of the Torah. It's right, the Torah telling me to do something. But when it comes to honoring a person who passes by, I'm honoring that. The reason I honor Torah scholars is because I'm honoring the Torah that Torah scholars learn. So my honor for Torah shouldn't outweigh the Torah itself. So if that's true, we get to Kriyat Shema, then also I shouldn't interrupt myself. Why not? Because when I think Kriyat Shema, what am I doing? I'm announcing my awareness. Sorry, I forget that whole train of thought. It's just because when I don't interrupt my Kriyat Shema, it's just the general rule. Osek mitzvah, patur mitzvah, that since I'm involved in one mitzvah, I don't have to do another one. Meaning that there's none of this contradiction about my attitude towards Torah, not Torah, because Krishna isn't about attitude towards Torah, and therefore that whole issue doesn't arise. So you have the answer. It started off with two ideas of why we interrupt Torah study. One idea was the Aruch HaShulchan's, and that idea was we interrupt Torah study for specific reasons having to do with Torah study, because we often interrupt Torah study anyway, so we interrupt Torah study. That's irrelevant to Kriyat Shema. Lavush and the Machna seem to say, no, it was functional of the fact that we interrupt Torah study because it's possible to interrupt it without it creating a break, a significant break, a meaningful break in my study of Torah, and therefore I do so, and that could then apply to Kriyat Shema if it's not a meaningful break in my Kriyat Shema. But then it goes back and says he's not sure that it would apply to Kriyat Shema, because it could be specific to the issue of Torah study, because A, like he said before, we interrupt that for other reasons as well, so once we're doing so, we do so, and B, because it's the problem of interrupting Torah itself for something ancillary to Torah. That too would not apply to Kriyat Shema. But then he says, you know, I noticed in the Birkei Yosef, which is a commentary of the Chida, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, an important Torah scholar of the late 1700s, I think, who had a commentary on Shulchan Aruch and Yeradeh, who says that he's talking about this whole issue, whether you stand for various purposes while you're studying Torah, while you're saying Kriyat Shema, and he says an opposite direction. He brings an idea. This is an idea that's going to agree with the Azer. He says he found in a manuscript a certain Kadosh, there's no name attached to it, but a certain holy person who had a long tshuva about it, and he said, not only don't you stand, like we've said until now, so this was the part that I was remembering before when I had thought I cut off, so the other said, because there's no reason to think that Kriyat Shema shares anything with Torah, because with the question of interrupting Torah study, because the question of interrupting Torah study was a question of do we or don't we prefer demonstrate priority to something that's ancillary to Torah study, which is the honor of a Torah scholar, over Torah study itself. That's an irrelevant question because Kriyat Shema isn't about Torah itself. It's about other things, other important things, right? So you could say, well, if I'm not allowed to let the honor of Torah outweigh the Torah study itself, why am I allowed to let the honor of Torah outweigh the declaration of Hashem's kingdom of the world and our requirement to obey Hashem? So this doesn't mention that issue, but this manuscript responsum that the Chida refers to in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch says exactly that. He says, "De'ein cholkin kavod l'talmid b'mkom harav," that any time that I'm involved in talking to Hashem, that would be actual prayer, but it could be Kriyat Shema too. So he says, therefore, he actually says, this Kadosh says, "Meha korbanot," from the first things we say in the morning, right, from Birchot HaShachar, from the early parts of davening, all the way till Aleinu L'Shabeach, all the way to the end of davening, it's all considered this Kadosh says, Tzorechem al derech ha'emet. They're all really necessary to honoring Hashem, and al derech ha'emet is a code word for Kabbalah. Al derech ha'emet is a way to refer to Kabbalah. In other words, and that's, I think, why this guy's referred to as a Kadosh. It's not clear to me, but I think my impression is that in Jewish tradition, when we refer to somebody as HaKadosh, what we mean is they had Kabbalistic involvements. I'm not positive that's true. I've always wondered why I refer to some people as HaKadosh, some people as not HaKadosh. It's not true that everyone who has known for Kabbalistic leanings is thought of as HaKadosh. We refer to the Arizal or the Ari HaKadoshal. We refer to the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. There are various people who had the word Kadosh attached to their names in Jewish tradition, but I think one of the ways is to be involved in Kabbalah. So this nameless Kadosh says that if you know the Kabbalistic implications of it from the beginning of davening to the end of davening is all part of serving Hashem and declaring Hashem and all those kinds of things, and therefore you clearly wouldn't stand during the course of Kriyat Shema. Now, meaning the Aruch HaShulchan, I'm sorry, there's a reason was because you're involved in the mitzvah. But this Kadosh is saying, it's true you're involved in the mitzvah, but we've already seen, let's say, in the case of Torah study, that you could interrupt the mitzvah sometimes, in some occasions. This Kadosh is saying, but the same, sort of similar to how we wouldn't interrupt Torah study itself for the honor of Torah, we certainly wouldn't interrupt Tzorech Gavoa, our direct service of Hashem, for the sake of showing honor to a Torah scholar. And he proves it from there's a medrash that says that when Yaakov Avinu met Yosef, the derivation of the psukim is important to us right now, but there is a medrash that Rashi quotes that says he didn't kiss Yosef or he didn't greet Yosef, he didn't get involved with Yosef as much as he thought he would have because he was involved in Kriyat Shema. So this Kadosh says, how do you know it was the first pasuk? He thinks it wasn't necessarily the first pasuk. And if you don't know for sure, this Kadosh says, Shev v'al ta'aseh adif. It's better not to do it. Meaning, if there's a possibility that Yaakov Avinu refrained from interrupting, from greeting Yosef because it was an interruption of Shema, anywhere in Shema, that would show us that anywhere in Shema does have this status such that we shouldn't interrupt it in any way to show honor to others or to deal with others. Problem with that is that there's a famous example that I've discussed in other contexts. I have a series on TorahMusings.com about places where Rambam introduces Agadah into the Mishneh Torah. And one of the examples is the question of welcoming guests. And there the Rambam does introduce the idea from the Gemara that the Gemara understands that in the Torah that Avram Avinu asked Hashem to wait while Ki Avram Avinu went to greet the three angels, who he didn't know were angels, he thought they were just guests, and that shows that Achdasad Arachim, that welcoming guests, seems to outweigh being Mekabel Pnei Ashkinah, seems to outweigh greeting or dealing with or speaking to Hashem. So, same thing here, why can't you say that the honor we give to a Torah scholar could outweigh greeting Hashem? So he says, no, that's different, this Kadosh says, that's different because he wasn't being mekabel olmach v'shamayim. He wasn't announcing that Hashem is the power that rules our lives, the only power that rules our lives. He wasn't asserting that at that time, and that's the point. When we're saying Kriyat Shema, that's what we're asserting. Yes, it's true, he was involved in an interaction with Hashem, but the fact that you can interrupt an interaction, that's a whole different discussion. That's what the Kadosh says. Birkei Yosef, the Chida, disagrees. He gets rid of all of his proofs. I want to point out, and it's relevant to this tshuva, so it's not really a digression, but I mentioned also in terms of the Rambam bringing Agadata into his halacha book, the Mishnah Torah, that this Kaddish quoting these things as halachic fact and halachic issues, what Yaakov did with Yosef when he greeted him according to the Medrash, and what Avraham did, or how we understand what Avraham did according to the Gemara, that all those create halachic realities for him. That's a very important and interesting phenomenon to think about, because there are sometimes when we're willing to say that Gemara is meant to be taken literally, that Gemara doesn't mean what, and this, almost everybody agrees, certainly the Rambam agrees, but almost everybody agrees that there are times when we say about a Gemara, it doesn't mean to say it for that purpose, it means to say it for another purpose. So once that's true, what we do and don't take for halakhic as halakhically valid becomes very interesting and important. In any case, so the Chida now rejects his proofs and argues that, yes, you do have to stand, even if you're in the middle of a parak of Kriyat Shema, maybe in the middle of a chapter. Now, the reason why he brings up the question of a chapter of Kriyat Shema is because we have general principles, we have principles elsewhere about what when you can or cannot respond to people's greetings. And the middle of Kriyat Shema is a time when it's more significant, it's more difficult, it takes more for us to say, yes, you're allowed to or required to respond to somebody who speaks to you. So that's why he points that out. He's saying, in terms of standing, though, even in the middle of a chapter, since Ezra throws in that Birkei Yosef doesn't relate us back to the fact that we can stand up in the middle of Talmud Torah, of Torah study, which means that the Birkei Yosef, the Chida, also understands that they're not parallel issues, they're not comparable to each other, right? That the fact, that the halakhic fact of Talmud Torah, standing up in the middle of Talmud Torah, in the middle of Torah study for a passing Torah scholar, in the end ends up being irrelevant to Kriyat Shema, because Shema is a different practice. Although this Kadosh thought it was relevant in the sense the other way around, that you would, the same way we'd say, if it was really going to interrupt it, you wouldn't do it. Here, you're not going to do it for those reasons. Sorry, I said that wrong because I was trying to rush to get back to the tshuva. The same way we said about Talmud Torah, that standing up, interrupting Talmud Torah could be a problem because it would show that we value the honor of Torah more than Torah itself. That Kadosh had said, same thing came to standing up in the middle of Kriyat Shema. Anyway, back to our tshuva. The Tzitzit says, Lefi aniyat da'ati, ein bichtei hashev b'hasagotav. He says, I don't think his questions on this Kadosh actually hold water, because the way that the Pasuk talks about Yaakov, it doesn't seem, though he does say, maybe it was just the first Pasuk. So he says, it doesn't seem like it was just the first Pasuk. And then he says, the Birkei Yosef, the Chida, has lots of proofs. He has a Shibol HaLeket as a proof, he has a Ra'avan, he has a Radvaz, he has an Ari. Then he writes, and I think this captures or gets at an important halachic principle, halachic issue. I'm using that word principle too much, I apologize. He says, "B'mechilat kvodo zal," with all due respect, or what it literally means, I hope he forgives me for the denigration to his honor, but it means with all due respect, and I hope he's not upset with me because I mean disrespectfully, I don't think his proofs are proofs. And I think that the Birkei Yosef was talking about something, it was clear to him, it was his logic, his understanding of the halachic logic of the situation, told him this should be true. I think that's probably exactly accurate, and it gets to the question of what constitutes a proof. Let's say somebody lists a whole bunch of sources, and they don't appeal to me. What do we do about that in halacha? Those aren't simple questions at all. There's just touches on it. He doesn't get into it, but it sort of it goes to the essence of the halachic process. Because, you know, today I know, and this is a digression of mine, one, as always, feel free to email me by my digressions, grothst@gmail.com. But it seems to me that today you have people who will advance proofs that, as far as I understand the halachic process, don't qualify as proofs in any way whatsoever. Here, Tzitzit would never say something about the Chida. Chida is a tremendously recognized Torah scholar and a very important Torah scholar. Tzitzit just says, I'm not convinced. It's not there. But I know of people today who advance proofs in the guise of halachic proofs that aren't actually halachic proofs in any way whatsoever. It's not that I'm not convinced by them. They don't meet the standards of the halachic system, and yet other people say, oh, I understand that. Yeah, it's a proof. So that question, what is or isn't a proof and how it works, that's work. Those are very important questions. In any case, we're on a much lower level of discussion here in terms of the seriousness of the issue, the seriousness of the debate. So the Sedezer comes back and he says he thinks that when it comes to Pesukim Zimra and things like that, which is not a Torah mitzvah, it's not a Torah requirement, so then he thinks the Birkei Yosef is obviously right that you have to stand, because if you're involved, now he seems to be assuming that if you're involved in a rabbinic mitzvah and a Torah mitzvah comes your way, it seems clear to him that you'd have to stand. The Torah mitzvah of standing up for those we honor clearly outweighs. Now, I think it would be, unless Chazal made some specific rule to say it doesn't, it generally outweighs the rabbinic mitzvah that you're doing. So the Tzidur seems to be assuming, and he doesn't defend it, he just assumes it. Osek b'mitzvah d'Rabbanan is not patur min mitzvah d'Oraita. That if you're involved in mitzvah d'Rabbanan, it doesn't mean that you don't have to do the mitzvah d'Oraita. But if you're in the middle of Kriyat Shema, which we assume is d'Oraita, right, that's our general majority assumption, mainstream assumption, that it is a biblical obligation. So then he thinks that the Kadosh is right, that that manuscript tshuva is right, that Sheva Altas Adif, it's better to just sit there and not do anything, not actively interrupt your performance of the biblical mitzvah in order to be able to fulfill another biblical mitzvah, because as we've said many times, one who is involved in a mitzvah is exempt from other mitzvot. So the Chidah had pointed to, as I mentioned, this idea that, especially between chapters, and sometimes even within chapters, if somebody greets me, I'm sometimes allowed to respond to them. It depends if I owe them honor, if I owe them fear, whatever it may be. Or if I fear them for, you know, purely political reasons, but I fear them. But those are where we see that you're allowed to interrupt. The Chidah says, see, you are allowed to interrupt for various purposes. So, various reasons. So the Tzidurza says he thinks that that's different, because over there it's a question of the other person is going to get upset and insulted, because he's upset, it can lead to hatred, it can lead to fighting, and that's why, in fact, the Tzidurza says, and I would not have known this on my own, says that if somebody greets you in the middle of Kriyat Shema, but you know that they won't be upset about it, and it won't bother them if you don't answer, they'll understand that you're saying Kriyat Shema, then you're not supposed to answer, he says, because you don't want our concern about their honor to be more significant than our concern for the honor of Hashem, who we're involved with in declaring Hashem's kingship in the world. So in fact, he says, no, the proof that the Chidah gave actually goes the other way, because in fact, if the other person won't care, then you don't have to do it. But in the case of somebody passing by, the issue isn't hakpada. It's not you have to stand for that person because otherwise they'll be upset. It's we have to stand to demonstrate honor for Torah, so we can say, if that's the only issue, it's not a question of their being upset, it's a question of the honor I have to demonstrate, then if I'm involved in Kriyat Shema, I don't have to stand up and I don't have to demonstrate that honor because of the things that we've all spoken about now. So that is a responsible day of the Tzidur for the 10th of Nisan, about standing up for Torah scholar, which gets into ideas that go beyond, well, far beyond that. The question of which involvements of mine allow me not to be involved in other things, and the questions of when I have to worry about somebody else's honor, when it is I have to worry about their reaction to my, as it were, not paying attention to their honor, and all the issues that we've discussed today. Once again, with gratitude to the OU, this is a responsive day for the 10th of Nisan. Have a great day.